What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in four brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!
I love driving with Uber because I have access to 24/7 live support. As a female driver, I need to feel protected. Uber has my back for sure. Uber, earn like a boss. Sign up to earn today at uber.com/boss.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. Whatever you're into, with Amazon Prime, you can go deep. So if you're all about pop right now, you could watch pop documentaries on Prime Video. Discover pop playlists on Amazon Music Prime. And if you're really serious, order a rhyming dictionary with fast free shipping from Prime. From shopping to streaming to saving, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
Forever Dog.
All right, 2018.
Man, 2018.
Man, this year went quick.
Did it?
I don't know.
It didn't. Here's the thing. It didn't at all.
No.
Because Black Panther came out this year, and that feels like so long ago.
It really does, yeah.
But always at the end of the year, I'm always like, whoa, it's the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know?
Another year went by.
Another year went by.
Yeah.
But honestly, thank God. So one more.
I'm excited for 2019, baby.
Yeah, I'm excited for 2020.
Well, I get that. But you know what? I think 2019 is going to be a solid year for us. I think it's going to be like
the
year. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Personally. Oh, yeah. Personally for us, we got to do great.
Yeah. I hope it's going to be a great year. I think, yeah, man, it's going to be a great year.
2019 might be lit. Yeah, 2020 is going to be better. Mm-hmm. Also, 2020 scares me because, you know, the world is
It's also
crap.
Scary. It's like, I'm like anxiously, yeah, anyway.
Because, yeah, the world, I don't know if America's changed that much.
I think this was a really good year for movies.
Oh, I think so too. I think we did. Black Panther alone, Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah, I saw more movies in the theater this year than I think I ever have.
This was also the year of movie the rise and fall.
You're right. In the same year.
Yeah, like it exploded like at the end of 2017, but like 2018, everybody was like, "Yo, we all got this movie pass. We about to see all these movies," and we did. And movie pass went under.
Yeah, but you know what? Now we got AMC, which you know, honestly,
I know
I like a little bit better.
I'm trying to figure it out. I don't think I have A-list. I think I have the one step.
That's just free reservations.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. I get to
Fandango.
Do that.
I guess that's cute, but we get to pick movies in advance.
Get to IMAX.
You get to do what?
Yeah, man, it's pretty good.
I mean, Dolby 3D.
Wait, what?
All for the same price. I'm not paying extra.
Yeah.
Wait, but
same price.
Oh, okay, I got to get that.
$20 a month.
Yeah, man.
This is
now a plug for
AMC. We're not sponsored by, but we should be, to be honest.
We should legit be sponsored by AMC.
Yeah, come on, AMC.
Real quick.
What's up?
Can we give some shout outs to some actors this year?
Come on, brother.
Who do you want to give a shout out to first? Who's your first?
I'm going to be real with it.
Who?
Okay.
Brian Tyree Henry is number one.
Okay, number one.
Here's why.
What's up?
He just low-key was in every good movie.
and his arc on Atlanta this season was fantastic.
Yeah. To be able to crush it in television and then crush it in several different movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a play this year.
He did a play.
At least one play.
He did a play.
That's right.
Which is wild.
He crushed in Atlanta.
A Broadway play.
His episode Atlanta has made the list. Not his episode, but you know how they do like one person.
Yeah.
Not one person, but his particular episode has made one of the best episodes lists on many TV lists.
Which one would you say
was his episode? The haircut one.
The barbershop. Okay, right. Yeah.
Episode is crazy.
Yeah.
That has made so many lists because of his performance solely in the woods.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. It was so tragic.
And, he was in Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse, which we already reviewed. He was in Widows, which we already reviewed.
Yeah.
He's in this film.
This film, Bale Street,
which we're reviewing today.
He was in something else.
He was in White Boy Rick, which was a good movie
Rick.
That people...
I didn't see that.
He was in... and I didn't see this movie, but he was in Hotel Artemis this year, too.
Oh, wow.
Oh, was he?
Wow.
You know, good for him, man.
Wow.
Good for him. Good for him.
Yeah.
I think he appeared in an episode of Room 104 this year. He appeared in an episode of BoJack Horseman.
God dang.
And of course, you know, Atlanta.
This just means he was really busy last year. Is that what that means?
He was busy filming a lot last year.
Is that what this
that is? But, that
what
is
they,
true.
But what they said was literally after the first season of Atlanta, all four of them blew. And what is it? Zazie talks about it all the time about like how sometimes they deal with like, did we sell out? Did we not? Because they just, they all just started doing mad shit out of nowhere. Yeah.
Did we sell out is a question.
Which is interesting. I'm like, no, you just made it. You just made it.
What? Does this sound like sellout movies? Absolutely White Boy Rick, Widows, If Beale Street Can Talk, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse?
He did great.
I think even if it was just, if it was like Disney, like if it was, you know what I mean? If it was of any those, of those things, I would have been like, that's fine.
None of those his movies I just read were bad movies.
Right. Like, his lineup was great. Like, that's what you, to me, it's like, if you're a TV actor, that's what you want to do. You want to get in, like, prestigious movies, not necessarily be the lead, but be good enough that when you show up on screen, people are like, damn.
Yeah.
You're so good. Okay, that's yours?
Yeah.
I want to
have others, but that's my first.
Okay, I think my first is going to be to Amandla.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Because Amandla, to me, and I'm very upset, Amandla did so good in The Hate U Give.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know what it is? I think the problem with her performance was is that she was so good that people don't think she was acting. I think people assume, and I think that happens sometimes with black actors where people just assume, oh, this isn't you stepping outside of your boundaries because, you have to know their struggle. You got to do, like, this has to be, like, so close to who you are. Yeah. And I'm like, no,
I think that film got overlooked by many people just as a whole. She was also in The Darkest Minds, which we didn't get a chance to review.
I watched it on the plane, but
she was in it, and it was a big budget movie.
But the thing is, like, that movie was—it's so funny because I watched it on the plane, and it was a YA like lovey kind of movie,
right? Mm-hmm.
But again, she was great. She was good in it.
Yeah.
The problem is that the script was trash,
right?
And again, it sucks because it wasn't her. Like, the thing is, like, that movie wasn't really promoted,
right?
Right.
You know, but she was good in it.
And then she was also in a film called Where Hands Touch that came out this year. Some film about the passage story of a biracial teen struggling for survival in Nazi Germany. So that obviously went under the radar as well. But she was in three movies this year.
Yeah.
Which is very impressive for
someone
that young.
And she's an activist, you know what I'm saying? So to be a young black actress who talks about race, and she came out as queer recently. And I'm like, yo, God bless that girl. Like, the thing is, she's done everything that Hollywood tells you not to do, which is, like, speak out against issues that may not fit, you know, certain audience types. And, like, she's like, fuck it. I'm going to do what I want. Yeah. And she did it first. And I always say this, like, not to compete, but she was the first one, at least out of the young black girls to come out. She was like, nah, man, I'm down with this. Like, early. Writing articles and stuff like that. Who you got, James?
Yeah.
I mean, this is hard, right? Because, you know, naturally I want to go to, like, Keenan or Kel, right? Naturally, that's
what
I want.
Why?
Just naturally, like, that's just what I want to say.
Keenan won his first Emmy, though.
That's right. Keenan won his first.
Oh, he did win Emmy. His first Emmy was this year.
I mean, that was way overdue.
Yeah.
His first Emmy was this year.
He just did the Grinch. He just did the Grinch movie.
He was in the Grinch movie. Was he the Grinch?
He wasn't the Grinch. He was
Cumberbatch.
He was his jolly friend.
Was he really?
The dog? He was his jolly friend. No, not the dog. Just like a dude.
The Grinch had a friend.
New character. They made him up in the movie.
Just a black dude. James,
trying to think of somebody who would be different than these people that you guys have named, because I love so many people. So these are people who came through my head, right?
Here's the thing: any person you name that aren't the two people we did are going to be different.
It's going to
be great.
So I was thinking about Daniel Kaluuya, right? Like
Daniel Kaluuya,
I love him.
He was he was in Black Panther,
and
he was also in Widows. He was great in Widows.
But I'm still holding on to Letitia Wright. Because even though she didn't have like the year that these other artists had, she was so good in Black Panther to me. Yeah. And I want to see her in every possible thing that could ever be made. Like, she definitely had, I think, my favorite performance of the year. She was so likable and so fun and so, like, you know, like that, like her character in that movie provided stakes that I think like weren't quite there for other people. So.
Yeah.
And also speaking of that, like, I think we just got to give a shout out in general to everybody in Black Panther.
Right. Yeah.
Because that movie had a lot of pressure, yo.
Yeah.
I mean, so much pressure. I remember when it first got announced on Twitter, or the hashtag Black Panther so lit. Years in it, like literally a year in advance, people are plotting how they're going to walk in.
Right.
It made everyone kind of reconnect to like their Black heritage when people started dressing up.
Yeah.
And also it made so much money. It, like right. literally outside of like those team up movies, it has made the most money out of a superhero film.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And he did it showing like Black. It opens with like Too Short playing in the background. Like for real. Like that's some Black ass shit in Oakland. You know what I mean?
It opens with Too Short.
Too Short is playing and it's in Oakland and it has, and what you did was you subverted that culture where it's like, yeah, Black Panther is the lead, but like everyone around him are Black women. Like the Black women around him technically, to me, are stronger than he is in a sense. Like they keep him grounded, save his life at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
And can fight theoretically better than him. I'm like, dog, you did it. You did it.
It was a good year.
Yeah.
I mean, then you got, and then you got Black Klansman that came out. And I remember we reviewed it, and I think we all kind of said, like, that might have been one of the best all-around movies. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to see Spike finally get his credit, to see, I always gonna call him Baby Denzel.
John David Washington?
Baby Denzel.
He also, Michael B. Jordan, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he was in Black Panther and Creed 2. Cynthia Erivo.
Yeah,
who was in Widows and also in the Bad Times at the Casino Royale. Oh,
and,
Casino Royale,
and now
or
she's
whatever.
Playing the woman we always wanted to see in a movie.
Yeah, hey, I mean, honestly, it's been such a great, I think it's been such a great year. I think everybody like recognizes that. Like, if Beale Street could talk, it would be singing this year's praises.
Yeah, that's
don't you think?
I think that that's true.
Don't
I
you think like this year is so great that if Beale Street could talk?
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, like, could you imagine if Beale Street could talk?
If it could talk, it would be saying, you know.
Honestly?
It'd be like 2018?
Yo, honestly,
why is his voice so high?
But I will say this though. Honestly, John, that was a great transition.
Okay.
Like honestly, think about it. We were in mid-conversation.
Last of the year, baby. That
I tried to do what he does in his heart.
Yeah, no, it is.
And that was a great
tough.
One.
It is tough. That was a good one. I appreciate it.
It makes me, it kind of makes me feel icky inside that it was good.
Yep. A lot of people recognize if Beale Street could talk.
Wow. All right, now we did it three times. Emma, let's start the show.
Jonathan Raylock, James the Third, Drum Milligan. What more can I say? You know what it is? Black men can jump.
Black actors, man. Welcome to Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood.
Hollywood City.
That's pretty good.
That was not bad, James. Okay, okay.
Good job, man. Good job, man.
Okay, I ain't mad at that.
I liked it.
I ain't mad at that, brother.
I like that.
All right.
Hello, everyone. Welcome.
It actually did. It was better than it should have been.
I was like, all right. My name is Jonathan Braylock.
I'm Gerard Milligan.
And my name is James the Third.
All right.
Well, sadly appropriate for this.
Honestly, it,
somehow appropriate.
Thank you.
For the first time.
You guys have been on a roll today. You know what I'm saying? Good gosh.
Before we get started, we do have a special guest
in
the studio.
Yes, we have a guest.
Here's the thing. I'm going to do the drums.
Oh, you going to do drums? Uh-oh. So I can do it? Okay.
I'm going to do the drums so you actually get something special. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
How you going to shame my drums?
Let's be real.
How you going to shame
my drums? Do you not have good drums?
Okay, you ready? All right, okay.
Wait, honestly,
you feel the pressure, right?
Honestly, I was like, wait, what if I did it like Gerard does it? All right, I got it.
All right, ready? Okay. Welcome, our guest, Rachel Edwards. Woo. Rachel works at MTV in development and also is my girlfriend, guys.
That's true.
Yes.
Oh snap, we just lost 1,000 listeners.
No, come on back, it's fine.
Yo, if our listenership actually drops,
oh, just about to be like, oh, never mind.
Your DM's like, man, fuck this
shit. I was holding out.
only single one. Damn it.
I've been getting shade for years for being the only single one.
That's true. Well, you know, I'm happy I could help out.
Thanks for being
here. Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
You know? And we're doing a love movie.
Mm-hmm. We are doing a romance.
A love movie.
This is a love feature.
Oh, yeah. Black love.
If Beale Street Could Talk. Directed by Barry Jenkins.
Yes. Starring the newly Golden Globe nominated Stephen James. He got nominated for his TV show.
Oh,
for the TV show Homecoming.
Not for this, though.
Not for this, for Homecoming.
This movie didn't get nominated.
Which apparently he's fantastic in.
Apparently,
I haven't seen it.
Apparently he's great.
Yeah.
This movie didn't get nominated, though, for nothing.
It didn't get any nominations? Not even ensemble? No way.
Not a single one?
Not even for SAG?
I mean, y'all can look it up, but I don't think so.
No, brother.
It, of course, stars Kiki Layne.
First film ever.
Her debut film.
Yes.
Stephen James, who was also in the movie Selma. He was in the movie Race. And then, of course, Regina King.
The great.
I mean, you're right. Regina King got nominated for the Golden Globes.
For Golden Globes. But
not SAG.
No one. Yeah. They nominated those white women twice for SAG.
They did.
Oh, that's right. Just a bunch of white women twice.
Yeah, twice.
Emma Stone twice.
Emma Stone twice. Mary Poppins.
Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt twice.
Mary Poppins.
It was three people.
It was three white
just
women.
Twice,
just
two
twice.
Different cats. Why?
What the fuck is that
Don't
shit
do,
about?
What, yeah. What
the hell?
What?
That was purposeful.
Yes.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Yo, I'm telling you, yo, it is something. It is something that's so tricky where I'm like, oh, I understand you don't want to have like an Oscar so white, like a Washington so white thing. So you will nominate the movies, but will not nominate the people in them.
I'm saying that. I'm saying.
It's weird as
SAG,
hell.
I'm saying Regina King pays her dues.
It's Regina goddamn King.
She pays her SAG dues.
Tell me she ain't up to it.
Mandela pays her SAG dues.
They up.
Yo, time out,
These
time
dudes
out.
Is high.
Wait, real quick though. What if they did it? They're like, actually, they're 2 years
they
behind.
They were like, they refuse to pay SAG dues.
No,
that's why they get nominated.
You can't work.
No,
you can't work.
True. That's
if
what
you
they
don't
said.
Pay your dues.
You can't go on
they
set.
Be calling and be like, oh, hold up. They ain't come through.
Real quick, let me just, for the people who are listening for the first time, this is a film review podcast. We review the films of leading black actors. We talk about them in the context of race and diversity in Hollywood, if you couldn't tell.
This bullshit!
Already. By Daraz Anger. Passion, sorry.
Emily Blunt got two. Now, what the fuck are we doing?
Yes, we are reviewing If Beale Street Could Talk. Right now, it's currently sitting nice and pretty at 93% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm. That's great.
Now, hold on.
That is fabulous.
It came out in so we're reviewing it early. So it comes out wide release when you guys are hearing this.
Right.
It hasn't come out in wide release yet. So I don't think. Looking at the box office,
there's
really
going to be any details.
Yeah.
So like, we are not going to say anything that it's done. It hasn't done anything.
Yeah. It has come out, but like the numbers are it's only four theaters. So,
okay. So
it made $219,000
no
in four theaters.
Hey, man, we saw it in the sold out theater yesterday. So,
it's true.
Yeah, it was sold out.
I mean, it said, the average is 54,000 per theater. So, you know, it's not that bad. It's only out like four theaters in America.
I'm looking at these goddamn nominations.
To be fair, like Regina King got two nominations for Golden Globe.
That's true.
That's what the naysayers are gonna say.
Fuck that. You're telling me I'm looking at the SAG nominations, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You're telling me that no woman of color, like I'm talking about at least, and again, I understand we don't have a lot of options, mm-hmm. but
it's so weird that they nominated Emily Blunt for supporting actress for.
A Quiet Place. She was
which is a
lead.
Which is a
yeah,
first of all,
lead.
She's the lead of that movie.
She's the lead of A Quiet Place.
Inarguably,
she's
like she
is the
lead
of A Quiet
inarguably
Place.
The lead of that movie. Second of all, that movie's great. I love that movie. But what was she doing in that movie that was like we got to nominate?
She had one scene. She had a couple scenes I loved though.
There's
a scene.
Great scenes, but it was a horror film.
There's a scene in that movie.
She had some good scenes.
That is maybe the best scene in any movie.
The tub
when she's trying to get burnt.
The tub scene.
Yeah, baby.
I agree. That tub scene was a good scene.
That scene is so I love that scene so much.
It's
I can talk about that
scene
all day.
But give her a nomination for that instead of Mary Poppins.
She
I ain't even seen Mary Poppins and I know
That's
it ain't Julia Roberts. I mean Julia Andrews, Mary Poppins.
That's Mary Poppins.
I mean ain't fucking Mary Poppins.
It's Mary Poppins Returns.
Where the fuck she go?
She back.
We haven't none of us have seen Mary Poppins.
Okay, John.
It's weird to give her two nominations.
It's weird.
One for a horror film and the other for a movie that's not out yet. It's just very strange. It's just very, very strange.
I ain't playing these games with them. You telling me, and you're telling me for a TV, you couldn't give Regina King
one? She wasn't
nominated
for TV either, huh?
No!
Yeah, that's weird. All right, so
that is
but
weird.
Let's talk about this movie.
Okay.
I'm a trash
enough
SAG
of
Awards as you do it.
But I'm upset.
We already did. We already did.
Yeah, we've done it by now.
Have they been burnt down enough?
Yeah, let's do Bell initial Street. Initial thoughts.
Bell Street. Oh, yeah, give a synopsis of like the movie though. You know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah, so yeah, it's basically like a... I do want to know, I'm trying to figure out how the book told the story. Like, I don't know if it was, because the way that the movie tells the story, it time dashes. It's like jumping back and forth, right? I feel like.
Yeah.
But basically, it's about this very young couple that they're in Harlem, right?
Or, yeah, they're in Harlem.
Yeah.
So, you know, they live in Harlem. They are getting married. The one family kind of isn't like super into him. Then he gets arrested because he's accused of raping a young Puerto Rican woman, even though he didn't do it. And you also have like a pregnancy, like an unexpected pregnancy that is coming. So it's like it's kind of just showing their love, like relationship, like developing at the same time they're showing like this like kind of trial and like the stress of like a baby coming, even though they don't really have the means to take care of it, and he's in jail.
Also, one thing is, you said that like trying to talk about the comparison between the book and the movie, I realized that there has to be more black movie reviewers, because if this was a movie, if I watch like a white film, I can go and Google like movie comparison,
right,
and it's like the book did, what the movie did. Entertainment Weekly has one, and there's not one single one. And you know why? Because it's a black film, and black people don't get a chance to review movies.
Yeah, I was trying to find it, and I don't know. Maybe there is one, and we just couldn't find it. But.
Oh, so let me keep scrolling. I'm on page 3 of the results of what is this? Google.
www.google.com.
Google. And Google ain't telling me that someone did it.
Right.
Yeah. So you know what? We should do Vulture, Entertainment Weekly, HuffPost. What is this? Vox. Hey, maybe we should get a couple more. If you got one person of color on staff to review movies, let's get two.
But shall we go into initial thoughts?
All right. You want to go first?
Would you like to?
Sure. So I liked it a lot, right? I love the love story. I love that it was just a good story and supportive families. But I also feel like I missed a lot of holes. Like they teased a lot of moments that we didn't really deep dive into. So like the Puerto Rican girl, like she went, like we kind of found out that she was brought here by this white guy and like had these kids, but then, so I thought it was gonna be bigger than that, but then nothing happened.
Really, we know nothing about her,
right? But like, but maybe we're not supposed to know, I don't know, but I kind of want to know, because you tease that way. And then like Fonny's family, like his sisters and like mom who ain't shit, they came in and left, and that was it. Like we never ever heard from them again. I don't
that's
know. It's kind of weird.
You didn't even. True. Yeah, that's true.
You had the one, really kind of only the one scene with them.
Yeah.
Early on, too.
I said a lot of teases and holes, but I mean, the holes that were filled in, I liked.
Right.
Yeah. For the most part.
Okay. Yeah. I hear that. Do you want me to go?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. It's interesting. This film, here's what I'll say. The thing that stood out to me the most about this film was the cinematography.
Yes.
It was beautiful.
It was just like a very beautiful film. And, it felt very intentional. Like every shot felt very intentional. And to me, I thought what I got the most from the film was showing the beauty of blackness and the beauty of black love. And all of the moments with them together. It was like, it was slow, but it was very like, you could feel the love. You could feel like the kind of innocence, the emotions that were running deep, but not a lot was really said, and the camera like lingers on people's faces throughout the whole movie, lingers on a lot of people's faces, and there was something about that felt very intentional of like, you're gonna stay here, like they're telling the audience like, we're gonna stay here, you're gonna like look and embrace this and take it in, and it becomes a part of you, which is great. I'm not 100% sure if I was down with with like the nonlinear storytelling. I understand it as a choice, and there's a part of me that was like, maybe this was more impactful than the other way around. But it left me a little confused, kind of like you were saying, Rach. Like there were certain moments that I wanted more of, and then we didn't get back to. And so because it was like this nonlinear story, it was like and also I will say, in the wake of like a Me Too movement, I was a lot more sensitive to the rape accusation than maybe I would have been at another time, especially because it was a Puerto Rican. It wasn't like a white woman being racist and accusing a black man. It was and that scene that we have with her, you feel the pain and the trauma of her, and I think it makes sense. Like, there was a part of me that's like, man, this is really, what a tough situation to be somebody who got raped and who didn't really see the person who raped them, and then like somebody telling them like it was this person, and you going like, yeah, it was that, you know what I mean? And like, and the way that our memory works, like, it's very easy to kind of just, if somebody like incepts a memory
you can create it,
you know, you can just create it, and then you just think that that's what's real. And that was heartbreaking to me, but the film was less concerned about the kind of messiness. I mean, like, it was in a way, but I think it was like a lot more about the fact that he was like falsely accused and like there's this racist cop. And so I don't know, it was weird. It was like, I was like, my emotions were like, you know what I mean? Like, I never, it was interesting. It wasn't the same impact as like a Moonlight for me.
Yeah, same here.
Sure.
I get that.
But it was still a really beautiful film, and I thought the acting was really good. And I do think Regina King was like a standout in the movie.
Yeah, she was great.
Especially because I think her character was like super layered, because you had like all of these different kind of feelings, and we got to, and she was one of the only people other than the two leads that we got to see like multiple scenes of. I mean, the two fathers, I guess we got the scene with the two fathers as well, which was cool and interesting. But we didn't know all of the backstory between like what did happen between her
why
parents,
they hate each other,
you know what I mean? And like, and like, what is going on with the sisters? Like, what, like, we understand that they love for their mom and they're like standing up for her, but like, how do they view their younger sister, and like what are they doing with their lives? And we knew a little bit more about Tiona Paris and Regina King, and that was, and anyway, there were a lot of great scenes. I will say this, I think ultimately, I'll stop talking. There are a lot of great scenes, like a lot of great scenes that I really love that stand out. It just, as a whole, as a movie, it wasn't as strong as I thought maybe it could have been.
What's up, folks? This podcast is sponsored by Earnin. Life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn could be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day, or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work, and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Think about it. Say you're going out for a special date, or it's getting hot, y'all. You might need a fresh outfit for brunch or something nice, or maybe you just want to feel good and take yourself to dinner. Earnin can help you today. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine. Enjoy Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Mm-hmm. Download Earnin today. That's spelled E-A-R-N-I-N in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Jump Under Podcast" when you sign in. It'll help the show out. Jump Under Podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period. See earnin.com/DOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Lay's. Lay's potato chips are made from real potatoes from real farms, and they're closer than you might think. Golden grows here on over 100 farms across North America. So whenever you open up a bag of Lay's, you can thank your farmers for making your stay golden moments possible. Lay's, stay golden. To learn more, head to goldengrowshere.com.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to taste the flavoriest flavor to ever flavor?
Mmm.
Snapple is ridiculously flavorful. And you can uncap a Snapple real fat with every bottle. Like, cows produce more milk when they listen to music. Come on, leave the ridiculousness to Snapple and grab one of your favorites that pack a punch. Explore all of the delicious flavors at Snapple.com.
So you open Google Chrome on your phone, you're hunting for a super rare first edition vinyl of a band you're obsessed with when you're supposed to be working. But this site you tapped on seems pretty shady. And Daryl from IT just jumped up from his desk. Oh no, he's coming your way. It's a good thing built-in malware protection keeps you safe and sound. Not from Daryl, though. Sorry. There's no place like Chrome. Download Google Chrome on your phone.
Yeah, yeah, same. Especially given like the feedback on Instagram, I was like, for those who did see it, I thought it was going to be way more, moving, yeah, and impactful. Right. But mm-hmm. your 2 points, the one about the tight shots. So usually those shots frustrate me, right? Like when we're on these long, tight, like beautiful, but they take forever and you're forcing me to feel a certain thing that I don't quite feel yet. Until I heard Tish say that comment about looking into a black man's face. And then I was like, okay. And then after that comment, like I really appreciated those like tight, really beautiful shots.
Yeah, that's a very Hollywood thing in 2018. Like it's been the year of tight shots. They usually bother me. It's like extreme. Do you want to go? You want to go?
After you.
I don't think I like this movie.
Fair.
I don't. Like, and I've seen it twice. So I saw it. I went to two Q&As. First time was with my side chick, Jonathan Braylock.
I was about to say, what?
First time I was with my side chick.
Rachel has learned.
Oh, my gosh. You're breaking it to me?
That's, you know, that's Tessa,
fine.
Tessa knows.
That's
Tessa
fine.
Knows.
Yeah. She's cute.
Sorry,
I get it.
Yeah, that, you know.
And you're into curly hair.
Yeah, so now you work in front of millions of people.
Wonderful.
That is so confidently.
Yeah. So I was with my side chick the first time. And after that time, I didn't know if I liked it, which is why I really wanted to see it again.
And we had a talk back with Barry, with everybody.
And then Rachel and I saw it yesterday, and James and Kat, they were in the same screen. And then two of the producers were there, but I didn't care what they were saying because they weren't black. And then,
I cared about what they
were saying. I wanted to hear the other struggle. And it was like, offense, I was like, you're not going to relate in a way. And the moderator was very bland. I was like, I don't know why this dude is here. He's not related to anything. But anyway, Regina King and Barry was there. And even the second time watching it, I agree with what everyone said so far. I thought it was very beautiful. And it's something that's very tricky is that I didn't like the movie until the James Franco scene.
The Dave Franco scene.
Because, and again, I get very antsy about critiquing people's performance who are like in our, immediate touch or whatever. But the way that Fonny was at the beginning, I feel like usually when you see a black man in particular, he's very strong, he's very brutish, he's very quiet. You know what I'm saying? When it comes to showing love and affection, mm-hmm. like it is very manly in a way and not gentle. And I thought, just for me, the relationship felt very cold until that part because he just felt so... I hate to equate smiling to things, but to me, it's like, and I know Rachel and I talked about this. The second time was determined to figure out when did he smile first.
Yeah.
Because in the first time, I couldn't figure it out. I was like, why don't I like this thing? And he did not physically smile at her until he was trying to sell her on that loft thing. And to me, it was beautiful. Because to me, it's like at that point, I'm like, I get it now. Because even after that, when she came to visit him in prison, he was joking and like he was happy. And he was like, oh, look at you. You're like two houses.
But did he not smile on the opening scene?
He did not. He gave her a smirk.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing. Just to defend him a little bit, maybe. And then maybe this is like actually like a snipe at Barry, which is, I don't want to do.
Yeah, but,
that not linear.
I don't know how the process was, but like it's hard when it's not linear. It's hard when you don't know where you mm-hmm. are as an actor in the story when you're doing certain scenes, especially yeah. if things are out of order, and then like how it's going to be pieced together. Mm-hmm. And there's a part of me that's like, yes, and like, would this have been solved if we saw their romantic relationship developing mm-hmm. at first, instead of it being they're already in love and then there's this horrible thing happening and then we go back to start seeing the beginning of it, you know?
It's because, like, because to me it's like, and again, it's very difficult because I feel like we, again, we rarely see black love or, John, we were talking about this like 2 days ago. We talk about like rom-coms, and I've been thinking about rom-coms, for instance, a lot. And it's like, yo, we rarely see like a serious black love story, which is like a Blue Valentine, a Revolutionary World, where we're like, love is hard, it's difficult. Or,
yeah, not even a rom-com, like just a
just pure, a general love romance.
Romance.
Like, it's tough. Like, you know, we got Jason's Lyric, which is kind of, you know, interesting. And then, you know, you got Beyond the Lights, I guess is, you know, whatever. So to see this, I was like, yeah, we got it. But I just, I guess for me, it's like I wanted it, the love to be overtly loving at first. Because to me, it's like we're seeing this black love. And the thing is, this movie is hinged on the love. Because the love is going to drive her to help get him out and him to keep his sanity to want to get out. And I didn't see it until, think about it. At that point, they started playing around, right? And then when she came to visit him afterwards, like he was like, oh man, you biggest two houses. And then even when he's beat up, you know, not skipping, sorry, spoiler. But like he's still trying, you know what I mean? And even when he's break, because to me it's like, if he is loving and super happy, when he goes through his struggles, it's going to make the pain of what she's seeing and what he's unable to talk about even harder. And if you look at it, it happened with Tyree. When Tyree is super happy in the movie, like when he goes through his painful story, it's like, oh shit, this jokey ass dude is now like bearing it. I don't know. And again, I liked it, like, but I didn't like it until that midpoint. But I don't want to say I didn't like it. It's just I feel very indifferent. Like, I don't know what's
But what
up
about
with
like
it,
the restaurant scene and when they were walking back from their date, like at night, he was smiley and playful.
Yeah,
but I guess it goes to your linear question. Is that after?
Right.
See, but the restaurant part, the first time when she's like, oh, I knew he loved me. Sorry, I'm being very particular about it because the second time I saw it, I wanted to see it solely because, and it's so dumb. I know it's so dumb. It's solely because of the smile. Like,
so,
the second time she was looking at him, but he was smiling at Diego. Like, he didn't turn, and I know it's so dumb, but
he smiled at her.
He didn't smile at her. Like, and again, it wasn't like he was mean because he was, like she said, he's holding my hand. You know what I mean? Like, he's holding my hand, which is a very love, which is a very important thing. But even when he, even when they walked into the restaurant, like, he definitely was like smiling and joking with Diego, and he came back, and this so dumb. The smile has continued for him joking and speaking Spanish with Diego. But it, he wasn't playful with her yet. Like, he was playful with Diego. And it, again, it's very particular, but it's just like to see a black man, to see him in his light is like, I needed him to be warmer. And I think, again, like John is saying, he probably didn't know what order they were going in. But yeah, so yeah, that's it. I like, I don't know how I feel about it.
Okay, I didn't like the movie
at all.
But I will say that a big part of why I didn't like it was because of how the movie made me feel, which was just like nervous in my own skin. Like, oh shit, I could walk out here and be shot anymore. Like, it made me think about all of that stuff. That was, and so I thought about that for the whole first half of the movie, and then it got even worse a little bit during what is probably my favorite scene of the movie, which is when Brian Tyree Henry has his monologue about it's like in prison. And I think that was also one of the most effective uses of the nonlinear storytelling and the not showing of things that we know are happening. I thought that scene was amazing. But then I had trouble with all the lingering shots and all that stuff that we were talking about. Watching that talkback though helped me to understand the importance of those lingering shots. Like, someone said something like, "Oh, I had never seen a black face like that before."
Yeah, Tisha's Vio or something.
Right, that's amazing. That's the point of that. Great. I'm glad that somebody is getting that. But I'm not, that I look at black faces all the time. I love black faces. Like, this is not like,
it's not for me.
It's not right. Like, this is that. So, you know, I had trouble with that. I do think that, like, I thought the acting was great, and I did think that I thought it looked great. And I'm glad that this movie was made.
Yes.
And I do think that it's an important story to be told and for people to see. but it was not my cup of tea at all.
See, even hearing you say that is interesting because you just were honest with like outright. I think this kind of movie is difficult because we live in a world where like there is so few art or what's considered like very arts or Oscar worthy black films that when you see one, you're so happy that it's there.
Yeah.
That it's difficult to critique it.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Because like we don't.
Yes.
Because again, like, you know, we talk about this, even some of our peers, like, yo, they can do whatever because like you cannot say anything bad about it. Whereas like this movie, again, like I'm only bringing this up because I love that you openly was like, I didn't like it. Whereas like, I wanted to say that, but my mom was like, no, let me try to defend the movie.
No, like I checked my watch a couple times. Like I felt like it was going on for so long. An hour had passed. And I thought the movie was almost over. And I was like, oh my God. Like another hour of this. I'm gonna die sitting here watching this. Then that's just, and again, so much of it, like, it's almost not a problem with the movie that the movie made me uncomfortable, right? But like really was not like not the kind of thing that I saw this movie for the podcast kind of.
I get that.
Let's
start this thing.
Yeah, let's start. I mean, it's so I'm trying to find
it's hard
it.
Because it's
honestly
so,
I was trying to find a plot review.
Yeah, because it's hard because it's not linear. So I'm trying to
because you guys saw it more recently than I did. Yeah, so right. Maybe you can help. Yeah. But like I know it starts with her narration, right?
Yeah, it starts with her and Fonny like on like these steps and it's like beautiful. They're matching. Which I was trying to think, is that real time? Was it a daydream? Anyway. But they're matching.
Well,
they both have
that's the other thing about the film that I think is also intentional is that a lot of moments do feel like a dream and there are like certain sequences that I think are not real.
Well, I couldn't tell, right? Because this felt like a non-real one.
Him like in the subway with the...
That was definitely not.
That's definitely not real, right? So like there are the way that the film was kind of composed is like it kind of makes you feel like a dream, and I think that was intentional because I think in the reality, like in the scope of like human life, their romance, them being together, was like very short, like very brief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like a couple. They said 3 months. Right? That's what someone says later on. That 3 months y'all running
they,
around.
Yeah, here. Yeah. They were
looking
that's
for
right.
apartments.
That's right. 3 months of them being like a couple.
Because they were friends. Because they were friends.
And so it's like very brief. So it's like, so in a way, for her, I think it feels like a dream. It was like, remember, like was that real? Yeah. Like it was like this amazing thing that happened and like it's all being taken away. It almost makes it feel like that what happened wasn't real, like it was just a dream that I had, and now I'm back to like this crushing kind of reality. And so, as like a mood, it's so hard for me with films like this. Like they feel like mood pieces. Like there's a part of it that's like I get the mood, I'm in it, I'm feeling it. But kind of like what James is saying, like at a certain point, I start to check out because when I don't have like a narrative story to like invest in, my brain is like, well, I get the mood, like I'm feeling the thing that you wanted me to feel, and like. I'm ready to go.
Right.
It felt like a poem come to life. It felt
because
it starts off with them on those steps, and then she's talking about her love and finding. And she's like, and it ends. I remember this time, the transition ends with a voiceover saying, "Like, I hope that no one has to feel what it's like to see a loved one through glass." And then the next jump shot is Fonny behind the glass for the first time, and her telling him that he's going to be a father.
Mm-hmm.
Which I will say this, man.
Wow, so is that
that's the second scene. It's the second scene. He's in jail.
Right.
And the thing is, like, Stephen James' performances, and I've seen him a couple of times now. Like, because I don't know how to define him. Because he's not a showy actor. Like, he's not. Mm-hmm. He's not showy, and he's not super character-y.
Right.
It's just, like, very introverted. Like, for instance,
what do they call it? It's like a deep, it's like a,
like
it's
he's aware.
Deep well or something. Like it's like beneath it's like very you know, there's a lot happening beneath, but on the surface it looks very calm.
Yeah, it's quiet. And so like when he's taking this information in, it's like you saw every single level. It's like he's instantly happy. Mm-hmm. Like instantly happy that he's about to be a dad, but then the realization of I'm in jail right now and I can't help you through this 9 months. Because the movie, well, it goes from 9 months and then it has a weird jump to the kid is two.
Yeah. That also frustrated me too, because the linear, the non-linear part of it is fine, right? If you're gonna dance around, but to touch on things like that, like a 9 month like countdown, could have been really cool to like see them try to figure it out within 9 months. But yeah, then it cuts to the kid is like talking and drawing, and
but they did a couple things like that that I struggled with, which was like it sort of seemed like we were following. It seemed like we were following a present and then like a past that was both sort of building up to one thing, but then they stopped doing
right.
and then they immediately were like, no, this is now a moment farther.
Yeah, it wasn't a simple like here's a present, here's a moment from the past to explain where we are in the present, and then come back to the present and keep going.
Right.
Like, to the point where and it's hard, like when those kind of things happen, the stakes are like, they're not as prevalent because there's a part of you that's like, I guess it already happened. So, you know, and then for me, it just like, it actually made me sad. Like I guess like, and I don't know if the purpose of this movie was like for you to be sad for most of it, but like, it was kind of sad because even when they're falling in love, it was hard to be super joyful about it because you already know
he's in jail.
And so it's like, it feels very tragic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, we have the scene with them
So it's the scene with them. She's telling him that they have he's going to be a father. Then it cuts to her waiting for her mom to come home, Regina King. And then, like, now she's about to tell Regina King. And this is the part that scared me, for real. Like, this next 15 minutes was terrifying because I never read the book. And my thing is like, yo, please don't let this family back. Like, I just didn't know. So I was like, is the mom going to go after her? Is the dad?
I kept thinking Coleman was about to just like throw the bottle be all upset. Like, I felt that way too.
I was tense.
But then it seemed like the attitude of the audience was like they were enjoying like when the jokes would happen or when like a life moment would happen. They were enjoying that. Like the silence between Kiki and Regina in the first moment when she's there, and like sort of the way that this is shot of like Regina will disappear behind the opening of the door, and then she pops in again just asking these questions. That was nice. Yeah. That, I mean, the tension was there, but it was that
all
was
the
like
time
a fun...
trying to figure it out. Like the whole time she's looking at the door, they're like,
something is wrong.
There's one shot where she walks across and she's just like, huh? And you see her almost let it go until she says, "Mommy," and I'm like, ooh. And it is something like, think about it, when you talk to your parents, there's a moment where you'll say dad, mom, but the moment you regress back to that kid for a certain point, it's like, it is like you clearly need a thing at this point. Yeah. You know what I mean? Either a support, confidence. The one thing this movie did, and all you guys have touched on it, and I think about it right now, is that we don't finish a lot.
Nothing.
Like they didn't finish. Like
so frustrating.
She didn't tell her. I would love to have seen Regina take in the knowledge of what happened.
And even see her tell the father.
Didn't the mom tell the father?
The mom told the father.
So she didn't say it until Ronnie's parents or Fonny's parents. Right. She finally did.
Right. And it's so interesting about that because, again, this dad. First off, who is this man?
Coleman Domingo.
Yo, my
great.
God.
He's great, and he's been in some other stuff too.
He was in The Walking Dead, I think, or Fear of the Walking Dead. Fear. Yo. My man.
Fear? Oh, shit. I don't know now.
Oh, he was in one of them.
No, you're right. Fear of the Walking Dead.
My man. Beautiful. My man. Like, this dude
he was
so good to see a happy black dad. Yes, he was in Birth of a Nation.
Yeah.
Like, to see a black dad that loved their kids.
I know.
And what was great about him in this was he did have that, he had that thing of, like, you did kind of question, like, is he gonna go off or is he gonna? Mm-hmm. Oh no! Okay, he's happy. You know, like that was nice.
Because Richard, you brought up a point. What is it?
He was great.
The trailer.
No, the moment about the daughter. Like I don't hate you.
Yeah. So it was nice seeing that daughter get so nervous because he asked the daughter,
Do you want to keep the baby?
Yeah, and she was nervous to, I guess, answer. And he's like, well, it's not because I think you're like out here like wildin'. It's just you're young, and so I would just like to know from your opinion what would you do with this child, which is. I mean, I don't think any father that I know of, would do that.
I love that, man. That was such a cool moment.
That was awesome.
And the sister.
Yeah, they were so supportive. Cool. Yeah. The whole family.
The sister. I'm bow your head, sister. I was like,
that's a great line.
Man. Like, it was just so much support to see, like, a black family, working class, just support instantly, though.
And he was like, and then he was like super happy and like laughing and like.
Excited to share the news.
Hope is a boy. And like, there's so much joy in him. And it was also, I know I'm skipping ahead, but the scene with him and Regina and like the love that they had.
The dancing?
Yeah. Oh my God. That for me, I was like, what an incredible moment to show like they are still in love, very much in love with each other, and giving their children like such a great example. That not, you know, it's like, it's hard. Like, not everybody gets that. Like, of like these two loving parents who care about them, but also still care about each other. Yeah. And like, and in a way of like, they're like, oh, you know,
y'all
it's
nasty.
Like, y'all nasty. Yeah. It's like, whatever. Like, like, you can call me nasty, but like, I'm still in love with this woman.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know, to me, like, oh, your dad, your mom, but like, this is my lover. Like, and it's still that way. And it, like, to see that romance still be there, like, that was so awesome.
Yeah,
like,
it really is.
We get to see literally, this is the one thing this movie does, which I think we talk about on this podcast, of just having like simple issues. I know this one is about race, but when Fonny's family comes over.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment you're talking about is not jumping ahead. It's literally the next moment. So it's like we see them do that because they call over the other family. And instantly the reason that dancing stops is because the other family's here. And you get to see one type of black love, which is like love, love. You know what I mean? Like you just said, these couple love each other. And then Fonny's parents come and it's not. Like it's very like combative, very like standoffish, very like cold, if you will. Like it's a very cold relationship. The two sisters, the mom come in, the dad comes in.
It seemed like a struggle, you know, for the guy at least, because it's not like they both were cold. It seems like he would be more down to earth and into loving his wife if she wasn't how and who she was. And I just want to echo that black love connection between the two parents, Tisha's parents, because one, I don't think we see that as often. And two, I'm watching or reading Becoming by Michelle Obama, and her plug. And anyway, her parents, like, this was like her parents like coming to life. Like, as I'm reading, like, and I'm like five chapters in, and I'm just like, these parents are amazing. Like, want them to be my parents. And they kind of came to life in this movie. So, I love them.
Yeah. But it was interesting, man, because, like,
so
again,
this
like,
is
we
one of my favorite
them.
Scenes for sure, if not my favorite scene.
It might be my favorite. But they said, what did they say during our Q&A? Like, this was the scene they shot for like a whole day or 2 days, and they just like had the cameras rolling.
Yeah. Oh, what, the daughters? And
yeah, like, this family scene, they said the cameras were just going. And they just kept doing it, I guess.
Yeah, and they did say at one point, like, Tiona Paris was like, well, there was a, like, she was like, wait a minute, I thought we were going to come back to me. And he was like, I think we got it. And she was like, because of the relationship that Barry, like, formed with us and the atmosphere he formed, I felt confident enough to be like, no, like, you need to do it again so that I know the coverage is on me.
So I can do my stuff.
And he was like, okay. And then he was like, the next shot, like, they shot it again. And that shot wound up making it into the film. Because she did. Like,
exercise your voice.
Right,
because she didn't know the camera was on her.
She was like, no. And as an actor, I was like, yes. Like, because, like, I hate it when you're like, when you're not given enough prep, and then somebody's like, all right, we're good. And you're like, wait,
I'm not good.
Focus on me. Like, I was doing it, but I wasn't like,
you weren't in it.
I know it was on me though.
It's so hard to do that for a full day. Yeah. So it's like, you're going to give everyone else like their support, but it's also like, wait, you need to let me know when it's my time.
Yeah.
So I can just give my all in. And then,
and for most of the actors, like, this was the big scene for them. Cause it was like, you know, there weren't, I mean, especially for the sisters and the mom, like, right, they're like,
that's the only scene they're in. Yeah.
It's like the only scene they're in. And like the dad and Regina King are in two other scenes. And then Tiana Paris is also in like one of the diner.
Yeah, the bar.
So
and
she
then
pops up a couple of times. What is it? Ebony. How do you say Ebony's last name?
I don't want to butcher it, but that's my girlfriend.
Yes. You know, Ebony.
Oh, really?
And then sister girl. Yeah, I know what you said. Sister girl from Undercover Brothers.
If you're looking at her name, you got to say her name.
Anjanue Ellis, aka Sister Girl.
She was really good in this.
And what's the other? I don't see the other sister's name. That's so messed up.
Wait, what was her connection with the lawyer? Am I jumping ahead?
No, remember it was Anjanue's the mom.
The lawyer was
Ebony's the bougie
somebody's friend. Like the lawyer was.
I think it was the sisters, right?
Tisha's
sister.
It must
okay.
be this woman, Dominique,
and was doing a favor for her.
Got it.
Yeah. So the lawyer was
sister girls.
Yeah, but so it's interesting. So like we had a scene, and you get to see the tension between the two families. Clearly, the dads are friends.
Right. So the tension comes from the mom, from Anjanue, Mrs. Hunt. She is very religious. Mm-hmm. And because she's very religious, she already didn't like Fonny, it seems like. But then now that she knows that they had a child out of wedlock.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It's a big deal. It's a big no-no. And she and blames.
She blames the daughter. Which is so interesting because I...
Sorry, I keep saying she doesn't like Fonny. She doesn't like...
Well, she didn't like... She didn't respect
Fonny.
She
doesn't like Fonny.
Remember she said the reason Fonny
ain't never been shit.
The sister said that. Fonny never shit. And the other sister goes, if Fonny would have kept his head in the books not doing whatever, he wouldn't be in a situation where it's difficult because it's like, yo, if you know that this man was in his house...
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the... And I wish there was so much, and I love the idea of like men people imagine, but for some reason, I needed two things. Three, I needed to, it sucks. It would have been hard to watch. I needed to see the arrest. I needed to see, if it was that same night when they were just like eating and having fun, I needed to see it be interrupted because we don't know, was it a different day? Was like,
I 100% agree.
Was he just at home?
The fact that the way that is introduced in the movie is just a monologue where we don't even see anyone speaking and we just see pictures of a map of where Bank Street is and wherever it happened. That made me so upset. And then the fact that it after that never came up. I couldn't.
Again, for me, just to reiterate, it was so hard because I didn't know. Like, when we first see him in jail, I'm like, did he do something? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And because all we're hearing is, like, he didn't do it, but we don't know anything about, like, the actual, like, what actually happened, and we haven't met this racist cop yet or anything about it. So I'm like, there was a part of me that was like, I don't like this idea that we're just supposed to assume that he didn't do it. Yeah. And not to say, It was just a weird thing.
We didn't see it.
We didn't see anything. We didn't see. Mm-hmm. And for him to be, the actual story is like, he was like arrested, like basically where he lived, like not even close to this thing. And like the guy just like, was just like, I'm just going to pick some random black or the black dude that I had seen already. And he actually knew that it couldn't possibly have been him. You know what I mean?
Storyline wise, I agree with you guys. Like, why wasn't there more detail, right? Like, why are these holes so big? But I wonder if that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it seem like it's so bizarre.
I can understand the intention behind that for sure.
Because the judge has seen nothing, right? Like, you know.
But also, like, to me, like, this movie touches on something which is very interesting. Like, Rich, I know we talk about it, and I bring up my friend Chris a lot because he is now giving up production to go work in a field where he like will deal with young African Americans who are incarcerated, some for like weed charges, which is insane, and who are literally sitting in jail because they can't make bail, which means they can't make bail. Sometimes like their cases just keep being prolonged. So now you're in jail for like 3 years and you're like, I haven't been able to see a judge in 3 years.
It's basically like being convicted of being guilty. It's like you are guilty before you're innocent because you don't have money.
Because you can't do it. You can't do it.
You're in jail because you're poor.
And it's like your job to like prove your innocence. Like that really frustrated me. The fact that the mom had to get money, fly to Puerto Rico, find this woman alone, you know, also it's unheard of and like unsafe. Yeah. You know, somehow find her, like talk to her. And then like, even if the woman said, okay, it wasn't him, like how does she then prove that, right?
Right.
Whereas like this cop didn't have to use their resources, like didn't have to confirm that what he said was right, didn't have, like, it was just so frustrating to see. That's
it. Think about a mother who technically blames her son, even though I guess she kind of missed that she believes that he didn't do anything, but the fact that he deserves it is like such an insane thing to me. It's like, you think your son deserved this because he didn't live the life. Also, the thing that we have seen, maybe we haven't seen it yet, but like when we get there, like, you realize he went to a vocational school. He wasn't robbing people. He wasn't, like, in the streets. This nigga was making wood pieces.
But he didn't live that elite life that his mother wanted him to. And unfortunately, that's that. Like, I know a lot of trash-ass parents who have that mentality.
I agree. Like, I get that. And again, I bring this up a lot. Not my parents, but some of my family members are these kind of people. Whereas, like, you think you're higher above everyone else. Whereas, like, yo, it could happen. This literally could happen to anybody. Because at the end of the day, it's like, we could be walking down the street and have to defend like your partner or someone else. Like, John, I've been with you where like someone is attacking someone else and we have to say something. It's like, that could have ended poorly because now it's two black dudes, even if we're not fighting, talking down to someone else who we think is doing the wrong thing. You know what I mean? And so like, I think they could have touched on so much, but this scene was so great because you saw the dad of Fonny say he's hip. You know, I'm hip, be loose, talk kind of shade
that whole
the wife
relationship
like,
was so amazing.
It was so weird. He's like, yo, I'm talking to a real woman. You know, it's nice to talk to a woman, basically, he implies. And then to hear this mom curse her unborn grandchild.
Oh my God.
No, that was ridiculous.
She literally.
That's why she got her ass smacked, which was wild, but.
It was wild. I mean, that whole scene was wild. Right. We like jumped away from it, but like you had so many people rock out in that scene. You had
all of them.
Yeah, everybody had a moment.
Everybody had a moment. And then it was made more complicated because the father, Fonny's dad, like basically beats, like yeah.
strikes her.
Yeah. He like hits her. And then they're all like, oh, like they're like, what are we? It's like they all like didn't like her. And they're like, well, that's not right.
That's not what you do.
Every emotion in that room was accurate. You felt bad for her, kind of. Like some people felt bad. Yeah, some people were like, how could you do that? Others were like, well, she just cursed an unborn baby.
Stop the curse. Because my thing was like, everyone was sitting there trying to figure out what to do because this woman is cursing an unborn child.
Such a serious smack, too.
It was so intense. And yeah, and then you had like, you had the other dad, Coleman, like kind of drag him out. And then the other women were like, felt bad. But then they were like, we're also not pitying you because like what you just did. Like, mm-hmm. let me just like, let's just continue to.
That was evil.
Admit that like what you just did was really messed up. And you sisters like trying to pretend like you have your back, like you're trash too.
Yo,
like,
Tanya's lines in this part were great. It was like, yo, ever since I met you and your pretty face, I just noticed your Adam's apple, which also is a diss already.
Yeah.
Already just,
she kept going.
I never realized
she had layers.
I wanted to rip it out with my teeth or with my hands. But if you touch my sister again, I'm going to make a quick decision. And if she
and
does
then she, yeah.
that step, when she does that step, it's like,
wow.
Touch her.
Oh, like, oh, shit. And then she goes to the line when the other sister goes like, we knew we shouldn't have came. Didn't know you could say those words.
So shady.
And then like,
oh snap!
But then
that's
my daughters
right.
would
that.
Never be as like trash as you are, or like do whatever. Yeah, because
my daughters are never gonna bring in a fatherless child into this world, or something. Yeah. Like that.
Yo, and then through that shit, I was like, dog. Her life. Also, to me, which is very difficult because watching this movie, all I could see was race. I get it was right. about race, but not race in like the greater sense of mm-hmm. American justice system, which I also thought, but it was race in Hollywood. Because right. to me, it's like, this is, Tanya's part is a part. If that would have been like Emma Stone or Jennifer Lawrence, like in a 5-minute scene,
oh,
in, like,
my goodness.
In like a fucking whatever produced movie, she would have got a nomination for it.
That's true.
Because it's the fiery, mm-hmm. say it like you will, it's like sister true. That defense, that would have got a nomination.
It's honestly so strange that none of these, because here's the thing, because we're talking about how much like, you know, it's like we weren't like super hyped on this movie. It's like, I don't think any of us think this should win Best Picture or anything like that. But like, it's still one of those types of movies that people get nominations for all the time.
Yeah, totally.
You know? Because it's like, you see all so many like
that's
Oscar
why they
type
made
films.
This movie.
Yeah, so it's like you see so many Oscar type films where like they get nominations and you watch the movie, you're like, this movie is nothing.
No,
like,
they just did it for
there's us. No way, and we haven't seen it yet, and I'm sure we're going to review it. People keep asking us to. We haven't seen Green Book.
Whatever the hell.
Green Book yet.
Just
but
got
like,
that screener, though.
But two of them, you know what I mean? Like,
you know what I'm saying?
Anyway, whatever. But it is.
But to me, and this is, I'm going to be straight up. If this was whatever white Boston movie and Melissa Leo was Regina King, Melissa Leo would have got a nomination.
I mean, hands down, every actor that has a moment in this movie it does acting that is worthy of a nomination. Mm-hmm. Like, every single one.
The dad would have been Christian Bale with a little bit of weight. Christian Bale would have got that goddamn nomination.
So,
I'm serious, man.
Some of the other things that happen. So, you have like Coleman and I guess he does it with the other father.
Yeah.
The actor's name is Michael Beach. He plays the characters.
I always call him Waiting to Exhale. Because he was the reason. Because remember, she burned his cup.
Burned
his cup. That was him.
Isn't he also?
He's in Soul Food.
Is he also in Soul Food?
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
I think you're thinking.
Yeah, I'm thinking
he's
of Soul Food.
Dude who had sex
with Faith. Oh yeah, sex with. This is the dude, and he was all crying like, I ain't want to, but you ain't love me for real. Man,
but
I knew he was a cheater or something.
Can we talk about this? Can we talk about what? Sorry, that's a different
but
movie.
So what's ironic is like to raise money to help get this guy to jail. They're doing illegal stuff.
They gotta break the law. They gotta break the law. We all know hustles.
But that explanation was great. Yeah, what they said. They were like, in that bar conversation.
We never worried about money.
Right.
That was great.
And he was like,
and they took our money. Like, and they did it illegally, and they robbed to get this money, right. So we can do. Yeah.
Because they were robbing to pay for the justice system to help someone who. And the thing is, the justice system technically at that point knew what was happening.
Yeah.
But that's just what it was. So these people had to break the law technically.
If anything, they were the most ethical in this unethical situation.
They did what they had to do for their kids.
That happened a couple times. Sorry, but when Brian Tyree Henry got arrested, he was like, I had marijuana on me,
a little bit of weed,
but I didn't steal the car.
You couldn't drive. He's like,
I don't even know how to drive. But the car, the charge for the car was less than the charge for marijuana, which was like. So I have to pick I did this crime instead of doing this crime.
Which, again, I bring up all the time. And I always say this because of the New York acting world. Don't worry, I will never shade any of my friends. But I know so many white kids who do coke. Yeah. I know a lot of white kids who do coke.
Just do coke.
And the thing is, coke and crack, no, I'm just saying, but coke and crack are the same fucking drug. The amount of African Americans that are incarcerated for crack as compared to when a white kid does coke, or as compared
crack
to like
crack is a cheaper is cocaine just like
cut down
and made worse for using it.
But we get but it's prosecuted different. Even when I think about like about like weed, right? We think about like I've been watching these like Vice documentaries on African Americans or actually just people of color who've been incarcerated for marijuana sales, right? For doing technically the same thing that is now legal. And I get that it wasn't legal at the time.
But only legal in some states. And also, what's his name? Even though he's gone now, the freaking monster, Jeff
Sessions.
He undid a lot of the stuff that Obama was trying to do, like lessening those drug penalties.
Oh yeah, but
like
you know who's taking up that mantle though? The Kardashians.
Why would you even say their name?
Because
on this
I want people to know how fucking stupid it sounds. Every time they talk about getting someone out of jail, I'm like shut the fuck up. You know Obama did that anyway.
Also, why do you get points for that? Like, you have a whole black kid. You should do some stuff for the culture.
Exactly. Like what the fuck? Anyway, we're not a political podcast. We're talking about movies. We don't talk about politics on this podcast. That's not what we do. But anyway, you're right.
So I just wanted to mention because we've been talking about this for a bit. But so we have that scene. But then, I mean, we should talk about the scene. And this is the only scene with Emily Rios in it. She plays the Puerto Rican. Yeah.
Also, which is crazy because she's on a really good show that people should watch. This comes on FX. It's about drugs in LA. Snowfall. So I'm just saying. That's what
she was saying. I keep hearing about that.
She's in the game. My thing about this, which is very interesting, and I know she's Puerto Rican, but do you think her skin tone was picked on purpose? Because she wasn't like a darker skinned Puerto Rican. Because to me, when we had this conversation with Regina, and she starts crying and yelling, "Don't touch me, don't touch me," for some reason, it just brought me back to old videos I used to watch them, like Black History Month, of like white women pointing at a black dude saying like he did it, and they would just like go insane and just start screaming like on cue almost, and then get like ushered away. Now, again, yes, I do like that this movie touched on that something did happen to this woman, so we should not criminalize this woman. Like even when Kiki brings it up to Tayana, she's like, "Sister, I do think something happened to her.
Yeah.
This is a big deal." Even Regina's like, "I know something happened. We don't want her to relive it, but also we're now doing something to someone else.
We shouldn't destroy another life."
Yeah, that made me so uncomfortable watching her, because at the moment she said, "Don't touch me," like calmly twice, and she still was touching her, saying like, "What to Mary?"
She was saying like,
"Prayer."
She's like, "Sister, like women." She tried a different angle. She was like, "Woman, like sister, like," and then
I'm like, "This is not the way. Like, you do not touch a victim." Like,
yeah. I agree.
So
you don't touch
uncomfortable.
It's so hard, and that's why that scene was like very impactful.
Yeah,
because you have two people, one who is desperate to not relive trauma, and the other who is desperate to save, for all intents and purposes, her son-in-law, and they're both so desperate, and it both feels like, you feel for both of them at the same time,
definitely.
And you're like, "Oh my God, like, how do we reconcile this?" And it feels like there's no way to reconcile it. And it's so crazy that she had, like you were saying before, that she had to like spend her own money, like, to fly to Puerto Rico, like a place that she has no, like, she doesn't speak Spanish.
Right.
Like, she doesn't know anything about this place. She had to like go to like this, to the
CD restaurant by herself.
CD restaurant.
Meet some random guy who was like, protecting
also, that dude
her?
Is in everything.
Yeah, he's in everything because he got big off of Game of Thrones. Like, I didn't know he came from Game of Thrones until recently.
Yeah, Pedro Pascal. Yeah, he was great in Game of Thrones.
Everyone says that.
You know, he's also kind of good in The Great Wall, even though that movie is out of the trash. No,
but he was
I'm not kidding.
He's good on with everything.
Yeah,
he was in
The Equalizer 2, which yep.
was The Kingsman, with the sequel. He was good in that too.
Yeah, he was good in that.
But my thing about this is like, yeah, she had to go do all that stuff. And it's interesting because what I appreciate, and I think this is solely a Regina King performance thing.
Yeah.
Was I feel like as performers and in real life, when you're trying to get your way in something, you use different tactics.
Yeah.
And you do it nonstop. And as this started, you saw her try to relate at one point to the kids. Don't bring my kids up. So she can't do that. Mm-hmm. She tries to relate to being a woman. You've never been raped. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. She sees that she has the religious necklace on. She tried to relate to religion. Don't touch me. Don't like, so like you just see, and you see at one point, which I thought was so good. You see as the woman is like telling her story, you see Regina King realize she's losing. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Not saying losing a battle, but like you
no,
see like
she is.
She's not, this woman is not going to come back. Because right. again, like, and I'm glad that she went. Because as a woman, she knows how traumatic this event must have been. Mm-hmm. And she gets that like, I know you don't want to relive this. I need you to. And she sees as a woman is talking about it, she can't. Because the woman says, I don't know what happened, but they presented him to me. And told me to pick him. And she says it verbally. Yeah. They told me to pick him. And
Did she say that? Because I thought what she said was, because there are a few things I thought about that scene. One, like I did not get the wig. Like there was this whole wig scene.
Yeah.
You know, with the adjusting, the fixing, the taking off, the putting back on, the going out. And it's like your identity's not hidden, right?
It felt, again, it was one of those things where it's like the scene standing on its own is a very beautiful scene.
Yeah.
But the scene, the context of the story, I thought. What are we doing?
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
But also, I'm sorry, I just pivoted. I thought what was said was, they asked me to pick him out in a lineup. And so I kept thinking, what did the lineup look like? Right. So if the lineup was like all white guys and this one guy, right. you know, I don't know.
Oh,
like,
it was definitely all black dudes for sure. But what she said is, because Regina King goes, you never saw him until the lineup. Mm-hmm. You didn't know him. Mm-hmm. And she goes, they told me to pick him. I picked him. And I'm like,
Again, if this is happening dramatically after the fact, I don't remember.
Do you remember?
Yeah. So what's interesting about it is you're just leaving out one word, which is out.
Oh.
And so I think it just depends on how you listen to it. Because I heard it this way too. Mm. But she says they told me to pick him out, so I picked him out. Which is like, did they say him, pick him out?
Yeah.
Did they mean pick out him? Or is that just like her saying pick him out? Exactly. Pick out the guy. Right.
But then that question is because what Regina goes is that, and even the lawyer, Kazalani, I'm not confused on what he said, but he's like the, not professional, but like the top whatever, was the cop being like, this is the guy, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so too. And I think so too. I do think that that is what it is. I do think that that is the thing, but I think that there's supposed to be a little bit of ambiguity to it.
But to me, that's why I think we should have seen some of the night
or day, or what happened. Or the lineup. Because
we're supposed to believe like, oh, it's questionable. Did he do it? But I don't think we are. I think we're supposed to think he's innocent, but I'm like.
Yeah.
So it wasn't actually until that point where I was like, could he be? Right. And I don't know if it's it was her phrase of being like, I can tell you've never been raped. She seems so serious.
Right.
Like the whole time I was like, obviously they like, you know, he did not do it. They're just like using him. Like that cop had a grudge, whatever. But the way she was like, you've never been raped. Like you have not clearly as if she knows, like you'll know your rapist's eyes when you see them. Right. And so it was hard for me to be like, oh, shit. Like, could she be?
I know. And that's one of those things where it's like, I think at the end of the movie, we are supposed to conclude that he was falsely accused, especially because of when he like kind of set out like where he was in relationship to the bail street and all that stuff. It was like, no, he definitely didn't do it. But this is the thing that I was kind of talking about in the beginning was like, the movie didn't, for me, deal with the complexity of this issue in a way that felt satisfying. It just made me feel like kind of like I was just like, this is all and maybe that is the point, to feel gross, I guess, or whatever.
I felt gross the whole movie, but I felt gross and uncomfortable the whole movie, and I do think that that is the point of so much of it, not the whole thing necessarily,
but the other thing about that is like that's different than just racism. Like that's like the horribleness of like living in society where there are people who rape, and it's so hard to get those people convicted. It's so, because it's usually winds up becoming a he said, she said thing. And we have a rape culture, and it's like, so those people get away. So like those kind of issues are like, it's like messy and gross because there's like that part of you. It's like, yeah, I've an innocent person shouldn't mm-hmm. go yeah. to jail.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then
also,
you're like,
we
need to like believe victims. And it's
yeah.
like,
yeah.
What do you do? In the, but also the thing, the point of is what they, again, what this movie is probably hitting on is that, yeah, what you're saying, John, is like, we need to do our investigation. We need to like yeah. take it serious. Like, I know we read recently, and I brought it up last night, is that, you know, a big thing happened where a lot of places in the United States right now are getting rid of rape kits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if someone does decide to come forward 10 years later, the kid is gone because they threw it out. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And it's not even like they've waited the 10-year, was it? It's supposed to be a 10-year period or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, they're not even waiting. Yeah. They're just throwing the shit out. Whereas like, we don't take certain things seriously. We don't take...
But I wish that was touched on. And maybe it's just like my ignorance. But because when I asked you, Dry, like, well, what about the... the rape kit and the DNA test and stuff, but like I didn't know that at that time they didn't do that.
Wasn't a thing that people really did. And also,
It wasn't. The science wasn't available.
Yeah.
And also,
DNA was like actually like very pretty recently. I think
it was
only
the late
in the
90s.
Like the OJ was like one of the first times they thought about bringing in DNA evidence, and then they were like, just people don't get this. That was in the
Yeah.
So only in the 90s was that start to like actually use.
But this thing touches on, and just so we can skip around a little bit, it's tricky because
Want to talk about the Dave Franco scene?
Oh, this is my thing about Dave Franco. Okay. And I feel like I know everyone's like, it's super random and stuff like
it
that.
It feels so random to me.
But this is the thing. So the Q&A yesterday, he didn't touch on it when we saw it, but Barry was like, he had these satellite actors in it because he thought Stefan and Kiki weren't famous, it would help people like relate and be like, oh, I know this person, and would just give it like a little joke. Mm-hmm. That's why you see people, what do you say, every 30, 40 minutes pop up.
Mm-hmm. Which is so cool that they wanted to do it.
Yeah, he's like, they wanted to. You saw Pedro, you saw Dave, you saw Henry, Tyree. I always say Henry, I don't know why. Mm-hmm. You saw Tyree, and then you saw Diego. But to me, the thing about this scene, and again, I get that this movie is built on love, right? But this again is, I guess, super early on. I don't know. Right before he goes to jail? I don't know when in the timeline
I think
of love.
It's like right before he goes.
Right before it goes. Yeah. But to me, it was beautiful because I'm like, this is the thing where, like, this guy tells you up until this point, he's been searching to get a house. People don't like niggas, which I thought was a really interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was great.
Because I will say this, like, on Thursday, I was out with two friends and I couldn't get a cab, right? I couldn't get a cab, and it sounds so dumb. 2018, I couldn't get a cab, but one of them had to get the cab. And like, it was a woman, and she like got the cab in 2 seconds. And in my mind, I'm like, shit, it's because my black ass is standing here trying to get this cab that it was easier for you. And so to, in the 70s, see a black couple go and try to get this and see that, oh, the fact that this black dude here seems untrustworthy, unsavory, I can't take advantage of the woman anymore. So I'm just be like, I'm gonna screw him. But to see them with Dave Franco, and I know I usually shit on, white male saviors, but I don't think he was that in this.
No,
I don't think
he seemed like an ally.
I thought he was just a simple ally because what he says when he gives him the house, also he plays along. Like he's like, yo man, let me help you get this fridge.
That was like the most touching.
Yeah, and he's like, why am I carrying more than you? You know what I mean? Like why am I? I thought that shit was funny. You know, like can you help me with the fridge, like the stove, and like he's doing that, and then he goes to the roof and he goes, I'm my mother's son, and I believe in love because love makes us different from them. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's twofold. To me, that he is a white dude. Like, I know he's Jewish, but like, he is visually looks like a white man.
Right.
Who in this movie, you heard people say, like, I think the white man is the devil because of these evil things that he's done. Mm-hmm. And we know at this point that a white cop has done something really bad to this couple. So to see a white dude be like, yo, not all of us are bad. I got you. And also to me, is like, I don't know, like, as just to see a man care. Like, you just see this dude just care about this couple who, like, what do you say? We don't have money or enough to buy a pot to piss in. So that means you're double broke because you ain't got the pot and you can't even afford to piss in the pot that you ain't got. You know what I mean? Like, that's some crazy shit when you think about it. But to see now Fonny warm up and, like, do the things that you want the man to do at this point, I was like, yes, we finally got to the I get it.
It was a great scene. And, I mean, I am annoyed because they never answer the question on whether or not they get a tub in a stove. Like, I don't know if that was so playful or not. I know it's like not, it's stupid, right? But literally, I'm like, are they really going to live in this lot?
Right.
Like, do they not have a stove?
But then they don't answer the question because maybe they never even
got a chance
to get to that.
Because where they get picked up, they get picked up at Bank Street, which is the other place.
The other thing that's about this whole thing that's weird is that they're like super young, you know? And so it's like this kind of young romance, of course, in the time where like people had to grow up more quickly than we do today, but they're still like very young. And her especially is like, she's like very innocent because she's like living with her parents though, and like had never not lived alone. So anyway.
This episode is brought to you by Snickers Ice Cream, the only thing that'll chill you out when you're about to find your zen and your neighbor whips out their new drum set. Made with 100% real peanut butter ice cream, smooth caramel, crunchy peanuts, and covered in a chocolatey coating. When you're out of sorts, Snickers ice cream chills you out. Buy it now at your local retailer.
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you are going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Hi, this is Will Arnett. We are inviting you to follow us as we go on tour and we take our podcast Smartless on the road. Join us and watch any boundaries we previously had disappear. Like you've never seen us before, you'll see us on the road ordering lunch, roasting each other, and on stage as we surprise each other with a mystery celebrity guest in each city. Boy, that sounds amazing.
Welcome to Smartless!
Don't miss our new series, Smartless on the Road, streaming May 23rd, only on Max. Subscription required.
I also love, just to say, go ahead, but I did love, again, every other interaction we saw with him after this. Because at one point, which I thought was very interesting, is that I don't want to see anybody get brutalized. I really don't. But I think I needed to see a moment of him in the lunchroom or something. Because at one point earlier on, he's like, man, you don't know what I'm going through. He's like, and he breaks his voice. And the thing is, it's something like very performance wise where I think as men, like we normally have a tone to our voice, but to hear his voice squeak and he's like, you'll see, like he was breaking.
And we did see that after Brian Tyree Henry's monologue.
Yeah, right.
So I think we were supposed to like take what he said and then realize like, oh no, now he does know.
Because he says they can do whatever they want to you.
Right.
Which, there's that documentary on Netflix. No, I don't want to look it up. Anyway, there's many stories about how that affects black men and how like you can be in there just waiting for a trial date. So I kind of wish we could have seen something, either just him in his cells by himself.
We had a lot of it.
I think that's why I enjoyed that scene so much, because it was like so descriptive and it was like it felt visual, even though we were
seeing it.
That's true.
Well, not for Tyree. I mean, not for Tyree. It was like for Steven, because I feel like,
but that's what I'm saying. That's what it did. It did that for me.
Oh, gotcha.
But I think it did it for us because we understood it,
right?
And I think that there were just so many missed opportunities to see or at least hear something that's that descriptive. To show the complexity of the story, you know, and because I do like the messy, uncomfortable feeling. It was messy, uncomfortable because it was like, shit, we're in this. Like, this is what's happening to people. Versus, I have to like guess it. And the people, you know, who will watch this movie, I hope they get it the way we get it, because we don't really get to be as clear, or they weren't really clear in the movie.
But it's something that was so weird. And then we kind of quickly get to the end, which is like he's in there, like we see him one time. Pretty beaten, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But he's still trying, which I really love to see. Like, he's really trying. He knows what his face looks like. He's trying to make this woman feel comfortable because she, at this point, is about to burst, you know what I mean? So I love that he was, because he's showing up. Ain't no way to cover that, you know what I mean? And I did like that. And we eventually get to the point, which I do hate that it wasn't a voiceover, but we found out he takes a plea deal because it was easier, and a lot of African-American men do that.
But see, even that was like missed to me, because it's like, I want to prove that he really didn't do it. After that scene with the women in Puerto Rico, like, I really wished, I don't know, we saw more. It was more detailed, so that when he took that plea deal, we were just kind of like, yep, he was either, because I think James and I were talking about it. I was like, after that last conversation he had with Tish, he was either going to commit suicide or take a plea deal, right? Which is two common things that happen to black men.
It really felt like he was going to kill himself. Particularly after that monologue where he's like, everything's gonna be fine, and then he kind of disappeared, like fades away.
And then you
away.
See the beautiful shot with the baby. I'm like, is this real? Is she gonna commit suicide in the tub, like, to meet with him? Like, I don't know. I was thinking of all these things, and it was just like, so he took the plea deal, and here's my 2-year-old, and it's like, what the hell? Like,
yeah, I wish it would have had a little bit more weight to it.
I think in the scene we were supposed to like it's like he lost and he's not coming. Yeah.
Also, I would love how long was he in there? Was that kid mm-hmm. two?
So
was,
and they was, wait, how long was the plea deal? I forgot.
It didn't say.
Okay, it didn't say. So
and like just
and what was the end? Was the end shot like just them?
It was just them.
Just them.
Because basically he and we didn't see what the kid was writing.
Right. Yeah, so we didn't see what the kid was writing.
Yeah, so I'm guessing she said, yeah, he's been writing it ever since I told
like
him.
Free
and he goes, daddy's
home or
daddy's
something?
Home or daddy comes home. So I'm guessing maybe he was getting out soon.
Yeah, yeah.
But like we didn't know.
But that's the thing is he. I don't think he was getting out
soon. I don't
think
so either.
And then I also think that, like, you know, this I didn't enjoy how this happened at all. But, like, it made me feel like, I guess the whole point of all of this, as much as I feel like I'm missing stuff from him, is, like, they cut to, like, showing the clips of just, like, or the pictures of, like, more and more men getting arrested, blah, blah, mm-hmm, blah. It's mm-hmm. just, like, again, like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's him or what happened to him. This is happening to everybody. It's
right,
the system,
right,
you
right.
know? So, yeah.
It's tough, though. I actually felt a similar way about White Boy Rick, which we won't review because that's a
pretty, White Boy Leap.
But there's a similar thing where, like, they're talking about the systemic injustice of the criminal justice system, of, like, how we treat both how we treat people like before they're convicted, and then also how people are treated in prison, and like how it's just like not right, like the way mm-hmm. that the system works. But in that story, like they were also trying to in White Boy Rick, they're also trying to do like a crime, like a person like start from the bottom and now like they're on top,
yeah.
and then like. In this story, they're also trying to do a romantic story. So, like, mm-hmm. it's there, but it's, like, not fully explored. Mm-hmm. And it leaves me, like, wanting for both.
Yeah.
I felt that
I
way
agree.
In that movie and in this yeah. movie where I was like, they're great. I mean, yeah. honestly,
it's
they're great scenes, but.
Yeah.
It's tough because you think about like, especially because this case also is talking about the legal system, but also, I mean, it's talking about, like, you know, rape and like how those cases are tried.
Mm-hmm. Man,
and if we're assuming
tough.
Now that this kid isn't getting out for a while, to me, it's like, it's just something. And again, this movie was shot last year. Like, literally yeah. this week alone, there's a white frat boy
right.
who assaulted a woman, took her virginity, and will not serve jail time. And not only that, but if he goes into like a drug or rehab, some shit, I don't believe in saying this shitty ass name, but if he goes to a drug rehab center, history is expunged. So he doesn't even have mm-hmm. to like file as a sex offender. And we all know what happened
this.
Last year with the other douchebag white dude behind, yep. And it's like, if you're going to say something about the system and how women are believed, like, it's just, there's a nuance that, it's tough, but this movie was long enough that I felt like we could have went in depth with one of the
two.
The problem is that I don't think that's not the original intent book, right? It was a book.
It was a book.
So it's like that's not the original intent of it because it was not dealing with that. It wasn't really dealing with that. But in the context of today, yeah. it feels strange. And then like I don't know if we handled it. I don't even. And I do think he was aware of it because I think that's why we got the scene between the two women.
Yeah.
But it still felt. And I don't know if that scene exists in the book. Maybe it does. But it still felt it wasn't I don't know. Anyway, we have to
Yeah. But you know, can I talk to Hollywood real quick, y'all?
Yeah, sure.
But you know what? You know, we're talking about black love and all this cool stuff. I think that's beautiful, you know what I'm saying? So I want to switch something up.
What'd you know?
One of us got married recently and I felt like there was a toast that James and I didn't fully get to.
We didn't get to really be a part of this
I feel like we were gypped, and I feel like in that gyp that we didn't really get to toast.
Just so you know, that's not a politically correct word
anymore. Yeah, we can't say gypped.
I can't say
gypped. Can't say gypped.
Yeah. What?
Oh, really?
Like gypsies. Yeah, like at first it's gypsies, which is also seemed is like, it's,
oh, okay.
it's considered derogatory.
I'm sorry for saying gypped.
No, sorry.
Can I say swindled?
There you go.
We got swindled.
Yeah. We got swindled because we believed that we were just doing an icebreaker, so we didn't really get to toast.
Yeah, we didn't get to toast.
We didn't get to toast our friend who just got married.
Mm,
Whereas people gave all these wonderful stories that we were like, oh, we would have done the same thing to our friend instead of just dragging him, which we probably already would have done. So, can we do it? James,
Can we do a Dear John? Let's do a Dear John real quick.
But hold on, James, if you don't mind, you're going to start first.
You want me to start first?
I bought something for the occasion. Okay, I want to toast.
You do realize this is an audio medium,
no,
right?
No, but yes. this is for us.
We're going to do a toast.
Okay, but nobody.
No, Dear John.
All right.
No, this is for us.
Getting something.
No, this is.
Go ahead.
This is for real. I don't want you to
feel like. Hurry up.
No, I'm not rushing this. It's in the fridge.
This is about to be a full hour.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying? This is real.
All right.
Okay. Yes. Dear John.
Uh-huh.
Okay. We've been friends for, oh my God, a long time now. 5-6 years, maybe? Yeah. Maybe a little bit longer than that. And it's been an important friendship to me. You have been a fabulous comedy partner over the last 5-6 years.
Thank you.
And working together, you have kept me in line. in ways that
in ways
that are difficult to express, and something that I really enjoyed about the wedding was getting to hear your now wife talk about what she loves about you, mm-hmm. and one of the things that she talked about was your curiosity and how and that is something that I just want to also just say because we never get a chance to talk about this, mm-hmm. but I really admire. Oh, that was it. That was
real champagne. In case you thought we were lying.
But that is something that I have always admired about you is your curiosity and the way that you ask questions.
It's champagne. I know you don't drink, but it's just champagne, man. It's just a little sparkle.
And the way that you think is just something that I have always looked up to, and I'm happy to know you and to get to feed off of some of that.
Thank you. So this is my thing. I'll go on the other side. You know, I feel like out of the relationship as my side chick,
I don't like this.
No, but I will say something that I believe is that, you know, out of selling shows and working together, like, we challenge each other a lot, I feel like, John and I. So I feel like if we ever agree on one point, especially if it's about a joke or about a scene, like, we've got it. We've got the thing. Because we've got the two points that usually see on opposite sides, and we made it work. And over the last couple of years, you know, I could say that our combativeness has lessened.
That's true.
I feel like it has lessened.
It definitely has.
Now grown in the ways of, like, not only understanding, but taking a beat. You know what I'm saying?
We got to go back and listen to that Blazing Saddles episode.
Yeah, this is the antithesis of that joke. But in saying that, though, I do think it's a thing to, like, watch someone grow and enjoy it. And then also, you know what? Now you stuck with us, bro. Like, now...
Bro, if you don't cry by the end of this.
You know what I'm saying? But now...
The whole point of this is for you to be crying.
And get him drunk.
You're not crying right
and get,
now.
And get him super drunk.
That's making me very upset.
Get him so drunk. But I want you to know, though, man.
A lot of jokes happening.
But that's how it's going to go down. But I think you do need to know, man, is that we do appreciate you. We do respect. And it's also very nice to see that you got married, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you got married. You're like a grown-ass man now, you know? And I will cheers to you, to that black love that y'all put on display.
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying? To that ring that I see on your finger. That's and, you nice know, ring. To happy years in the future.
Thank you. Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers to you, Bray Bray.
Yeah. Cheers, Bray.
So, yeah, that was my dear John Hollywood.
That was very nice.
Real quick, you guys, because the whole time we've been doing this podcast, I've been thinking about, like, the title of this movie.
Oh,
this movie is called If Beale Street Could Talk, right? And as we talk about it, I've been thinking, like, wow, like, yeah, like, all of these questions that we have, all these things that we wish we could have seen are things that maybe If Beale Street Could Talk would have said, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I just think that if Beale Street Could Talk, it would have said, like, oh, here it goes. You know what I'm talking about?
Why did you do that?
I feel like it would have said, who loves Orange?
Why are you doing this?
You know?
If it had a voice,
no, it would have. I just feel like it would have said, "Why isn't there a Kenan and Kel reunion?"
What,
John?
I'm
John,
not mad
Ennis.
At that.
Coming to
John Ennis.
All right,
Ennis. We did it.
It's time for the cause. We rate and review films.
What is
films.
Wrong with you?
Not based on how much we like the film, but whether or not we feel like it helped the cause of more leading black actors in Hollywood. Feel like it 100% helped the cause. We give it a black fist. Feel like it somewhat helped the cause. We give it a white palm. And we feel, hey, man, this film didn't help the cause at all. We don't give it anything. Count of three, we'll all raise our ratings. Ready? Ready?
Mm-hmm.
One, two, three.
Hey!
Four black fists.
Yeah. I mean, we had to.
I'll go first. It's like, we had to, one, because this is like a prestigious black film that literally puts black love on display. It's shot beautifully. Honestly, I've never seen black faces on screen that close up. Flawless, like,
yeah.
No one had a pimple, no one had a, like, I'm like, God,
they were gorgeous.
Damn, all this beautiful mahogany, all this melanin popping on this screen.
No one had
boy.
A pimple, though.
No one did. I was like,
not a single one.
No, but the thing is, it was something about seeing black people that pristine, that perfect, but also living in a life that is very unperfect. I was like, this is beautiful. I hope we get to see more levels of that. I love the two families. I love, again, we touched on seeing Kiki's mom's, their love, and then also seeing like Stefan's parents and that type of relationship. So we got to see mm-hmm. that we are not just one thing. We're multifaceted. We come from different backgrounds, and that's something that we really don't see. Just now, maybe the next time we see a black love story, it's not about their race. It's about like, oh shit, our daughter's lost. How do we find her? Like, this is very traumatizing. Not about our black daughter, just our daughter, or like just our son. And we finally get to the point of us not having to rely on race to like tell our stories.
Yeah.
Even though it's okay to use race, I just don't want it to be the thing that we only do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I gave it a black fist because of all the wonderful actors that are in it that hopefully will continue to go on and do great stuff. Kiki and Stefan James, and of course you had Regina King. I mean, always keeping it just incredible.
She's just perfect.
Coleman Domingo, the whole cast. It was really great. And and even though it seems like it won't get as much Academy Award love as maybe it wanted to, and maybe some other films are this year, it still was one of another like kind of black, like this like year of black excellence that's been happening. Mm-hmm. So much so that we don't have to rely on just one film to be great, which is awesome. Like, we actually get to critique it in like a real way and say, hey, these are things we loved about it. These are some of the things that we didn't. And I love that we get to do that now. We didn't really kind of always. So that's great. Yep.
I gave it a black fist for all the reasons everybody said so far. Barry Jenkins wrote this the same time that he wrote Moonlight, which is amazing. So big ups to him. And the acting was really, really stellar. I thought everybody did a fantastic job, and they all deserve accolades, even though they may not be getting them. I also find it interesting. This is something I thought of earlier, forgot to say, but I find it interesting. This is the second movie that we watched this year that had the phrase between two lovers, we have all the time in the world, and they didn't. Mm. And I just, the fact that like that is something that can happen, like where we see parallel lines or themes happening in black films that are like have major releases is nice. And I'm glad that we are able to be a part of that. And I'm glad that is happening. So, you know, had to give it a black fist.
Yeah.
I would give this a black, or I did give this a black fist because of everything you guys said. I'm echoing that. But also, we're continuing James Baldwin's legacy. That's right. Yes. And like his life and his words and his beautiful work. Absolutely. So as much as I can critique the film, I couldn't critique a story because, you know, I haven't read it yet. And also, like, there were certain details that, sure, we said we missed, but there were others that I really hope people do take home with them. One of which is, like, during that last scene with Tish and Fonny and their son. Fonny didn't even know that this kid could, like, prayed before meals, right?
Yeah.
Like, there were such little things that I hope that we see. Yeah, and it's awful. Like, their fathers and their parents, siblings incarcerated right now that do not get to see these little things that are big things. And in the thing with, what's it, Brian Terry, mm-hmm. The PTSD is like real. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people who are incarcerated are treated like veterans, but unglorified, right? Like, you mm-hmm. send them into this war and you beat them down and all that, and you bring them back to life, or, you know, let them come out afterwards, and they're just completely different, obviously. Yeah. So I just hope that, you know, if you are a white person or a person who happens to be white, as Amanda Saleswood says, say that you know, you see that, you know, because you're white people, or you're, you know, your person happens to be white. If your person happens to be white, then you've got a good heart and you're smart and you can see that, understand the system is so friggin' flawed, and hopefully use your voices to try to change that. Yeah. So, black fist.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here, Rach.
Oh my gosh, you're welcome.
Do you want people to follow you on social media?
Sure. Rachel A. Edwards, Rachel spelled like Michael Jackson, RACHAEL.
You can follow our podcast at Black Men Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Follow me at John Braylock, JonBraylock, Twitter and Instagram.
You can follow me at James Third Comedy, JamesThirdComedy.com. Third is 3RD.
You can follow me on Insta and Twitter at Gerard Milligan.
Mm-hmm.
And
if you go to BlackMenPodcast.com, we do have a button that says merch. Just click on that button. You'll go to our merch website with the through T Public, which is we just got a bunch of cool.
Yo, honestly,
so cute.
It's dope. Hopefully, we'll have some pictures out by the time you're hearing this too, because we got some stuff to show. And then if you rate and review us on iTunes, give us 5 stars. We will read your review on the air. This one is, I'm excited to read this one. Oh, it's
I never liked it.
It's spelled, I think it's pronounced queer, but it's spelled Q-Q-E-E-R-R. Love from a mixed queen in Chicago.
Oh.
This podcast is such a joy to listen to. It gets me so hyped to hear these three intelligent and handsome black men talk about the intersectionality of entertainment, race, gender, and politics. Special shout out to Giraffe for being fine AF.
Who said that?
And always showing up for black women. Listening to some older episodes this weekend, I found my eyes welling up as Jonathan talked about not being allowed to play the rock around the white kids growing up, even though he looked the most like him. I had the exact same experience with white kids saying I couldn't be Beyonce when we were playing together. I had to be Kelly, even though I had the best voice and looked the most like B. As a mixed person who grew up around mostly very racist white people, I've never truly heard my experience echoed back until listening to this podcast. I mean this to say that this podcast is important far beyond the conversation of entertainment. It's important for us to continue sharing our histories so we know the best way to rewrite them. Anyway, thanks again for all the great work you do. Come to a show in Chicago soon, and please talk about Queen Latifah more.
Yeah, we should put that. We should put that review on. Like,
nothing about me though. She ain't.
That's all you heard. That's all you heard. Post. There was nothing about you.
There was no shout out to James.
And then I'll read this one just because it's really short and quick. This is by Cash DZ. It says, "You will learn something, so listen to it."
I love it.
Thank you guys.
You guys are great.
Thank you.
Next week, I do think will be. Oh well,
Aquaman.
Depends.
Probably Save the Last Dance, or
it's either Save the Last Dance or maybe we might do Escape Room or Aquaman.
But this is the last podcast of 2018, right?
Yeah. So happy New Year.
Enjoy it. Do something nice. Have fun, y'all.
All right. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
Forever.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog Team and liking our page on Facebook.
What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The ghost with the most past due child support is back in 4 brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!